I'd struggle with the title of today's message. I wanted to call it The Power of a Nagging Mama, but I decided to call it The Power of a Meddling Mom. I'd like to tell you just several stories about moms in the Bible. I've always thought that these were humorous stories. You know, we live in a time that parents are called to have like hands-off parenting. And basically what's valued in the society is if you're almost like not involved at all. You know, we're locked out of the schools, we're locked out of any real voice. I do think it's a tragedy that a young girl needs to have her mom's permission to get her ears pierced, but she can, you know, get an abortion without any thought whatsoever. I think that at times have changed. When I was a child, things were very much different. There was definitely hands-on parenting, and you know, sometimes they laid hands in the wrong places, if you know what I'm saying. But there was a lot more involvement that happened in a time. And right now, the society says that we should be able to shepherd a child from a distance, and so much so that the idea of influence is almost seen as a negative thing. And so relationship is convoluted to a point where parents are often afraid to say anything or do anything that might bring harm or put their kids, you know, into therapy. And it took me a long, long time to come to a point of reconciliation with my own mom. You've heard me tell stories about it. As a matter of fact, it took an encounter with a crazy father to when I was 46 years old to make me appreciate my mother even more. And there's been a lot of reconciliation that's happened in my life between me and my mom. My mom passed away a number of years ago, but the more I know, the more I begin to understand who she was. There's a Mother's Day card that I was shopping for a Mother's Day card for Sue, and there was one that was sitting in Target that just kind of caught my eye. It said that, "Mom, I remember that little prayer that you used to say for me every day." And as you open the card, it says, "God help you if you ever do that again." And I started laughing because it drew my attention to a story from Jesse Duplantis, who tells a story about how he had decided he wanted to backslide from God and he had kind of joined his biker gang. And it actually took him to drinking in Tijuana, Mexico. But his mom persistently prayed for him, and he had been spending quite a long time down in Mexico. And one day he was liquored up in a cheap bar in Tijuana, and the Spirit of God came upon him, and he ended up prophesying for the entire bar. Stunned about what he just did to himself, he picked up the phone and called the only person he could think of that would have started that kind of momentum, and that was his praying mom. So as the phone answers, as the Jesse describes it, his mom answered the phone and he says, "Mama, are you praying for me again?" And she says, "Jesse, I saw you in that crazy bar in the spirit and you need to come home." He's like, "Mama, stop praying for me." hung up the phone. There's a lot of moms in the Bible that just didn't go the status quo. And so I decided that I would talk a little bit about them and maybe bring some hope to people. The first one that I would like to talk about is the moms that mentor. You know, when I first came to saving faith, I didn't really have a family, and it was shortly after I became a Christian that my mom passed away. And so there was, you know, some male influence in the church, but the ones that invited me over to Sunday supper for fried chicken dinners and to spend talks with me were really the ladies of the church. And so one patriarch in particular who just didn't seem to be afraid of my past was a lady, Jean Reed, who spent a lot of time with me in her crazy household. And I didn't know much about Christianity, but there was a lot of Sunday nights that I spent talking about theology and talking about God. And I owe a lot to that kind of relationship. And so as I thought about it, I'd like to talk just a little bit about this whole idea of in the book of Ruth, Ruth chapter 4. You don't have to turn there, but one of my most notable sermons was off of this particular book. There's been many people who have written about the subject of reversing life's greatest losses, and this is a true story of a mom who wasn't a natural mother but began to exert influence into the life of a young believer, that being Ruth. Ruth was actually Naomi's daughter-in-law. And the story is that there's this famine that Naomi is married to this man named Abimelech, and there's a famine that's in the land at the time. And so Naomi is trying to flee from the famine, and she ends up in Moab with her two sons. And her two sons marry these Moabite women. One of them is Ruth. And as the sons actually die while they're in exile in Moab, and so this Naomi is left with the two girls, and she sends them both back to her house. But one of the daughters, Ruth, decides that she's going to stay. And she determines in her heart to make Naomi's people. Naomi has such an influence on her life that Ruth determines in her heart to make Naomi's people her people. And so she goes with her, and ultimately, some of you might know the love story, but she ends up marrying a man named Boaz, and actually it's Ruth who ultimately gives birth to the lineage of Christ. And so there's this whole priestly line that's birthed from a person that wasn't even part of the natural lineage. And so you see the power of influence that Naomi had over Ruth. The second story I'd like to talk to you about is Mom the Intercessor. There's a couple of stories here that I think are funny, things that maybe one of these days you'd like to look at moms who just didn't know their boundaries. The first one is titled Law and Order, Jochebed the Basket Case. If you think about this story, this mother actually broke the law to save her son Moses. She cared so much about that child that she was willing to stand in the face of whatever punishment would come, just so she could intercede on behalf of the life of her son. The second story that stands up to me is Rebecca, the glue stick, and the hairy old coat. Rebecca was a strange woman. She was actually the daughter of, I think she would end up have been direct lineage of this crazy old guy named Laban, who you would understand later Labanizes poor Jacob and kind of deceives him. So she's kind of she's kind of down that lineage. But Rebecca so believed in her son Jacob that at some point in time in his life, she actually intercedes on his behalf and kind of fools Isaac, who's a little old and blind at that time, and allows Jacob to be the one who inherits the blessing that God has. Which again proves that a mom with a craft kit can be a very dangerous thing. All of you know the story of David and Bathsheba, and it's really easy to think of Bathsheba in really negative terms. Obviously, it puts a whole new picture on taking a bath on your roof. But not all bad comes from Bathsheba. And actually, her son Solomon ends up being the one who succeeds David in the throne. And yet that event would not have happened had Bathsheba not gone before King David and reminded him of the promise that he made to her many, many years ago. And because of that, Solomon, who actually was not the next in line to be heir to the throne, ends up in a big contention with brother Absalom, but ultimately ends up being the king of Israel and also on the priestly lineage of Jesus Christ. The last story that just seems to kind of like stand out to me is what I'm going to call the widow and the oil in 2 Kings chapter 4. Now this mom didn't understand the boundaries either, but this woman was the wife of a prophet, and you could find that story in 2 Kings chapter 4 verse 1. But her husband dies. He loved God, but now his creditors are kind of coming after her because the husband's not there to pay the bills. Somehow the story of a guy who serves God that may not have all of his financial act together kind of was a little bit close to home with me, so I've always kind of looked at this story. But when the creditors decide to come, they decide that they're going to make the two kids, the two boys, slaves. Now, I think that increased the intercession on the mom's part, but it also increased the intercession on the son's part. They obviously learned how to pray after that point in time. So she goes to Elisha the prophet, and Elisha actually turns her situation around, and she gets a miracle from God just on the basis of her encounter with Elisha the prophet. And so she pleads her son's behalf in spite of whatever is naturally coming their way. I want you to think about the power of that just for a second. The power of a mom who just doesn't take the status quo. In all these cases, the mom just did not take the natural course of events. And each one of them, in their own way, kind of took matters in their own hands and went to bat to cause a turn. And not just a turn in the lives of these individuals. These are now historic moments that are recorded for you and I and for generations to come. These particular moments turn the tide of history. And it's really easy to disconnect yourself from those stories, to think that they happened a long time ago to people that we don't know. They're just faceless names to us now. But I want to carry and just ask you to just bear the significance just for a moment. Do you suppose, you hear me say this quite a bit, do you suppose that these people knew who they were? Like, do you imagine that Jacob really knew who he was in the course of history? Do you think that the two sons of this prophet knew who they were in the course of the history? Probably not. These women did not know, well, I've got to do this because for the next eons to come, they're going to talk about me, and so I better do the right thing at this time. These are people that are in desperate situations, just like you and me, that are very much overwhelmed with the circumstances of life, and they chose not to just take the status quo, but they chose to intercede on behalf of their children in a very kind of a domineering way. They were being very aggressive, very assertive, and they turned the course not only for the life of their children, but they turned the course for human history itself. Where are you today in that situation? I mean, think about your influence over your children's life. I try every moment that I can when I'm encountering them to recognize that this moment may be all that I have with them. And so I steward the moment, recognizing that God may empower me to be able to turn the course of history for my own children's life, not knowing what might come. And I encourage you in the same way today, no matter what it is that you're facing, to not necessarily shy back from what God has entrusted into your care. There is a lot that you can do as a parent to turn the course of history for your children. There's a lot that you can do as a parent that might possibly turn the course of human history as well. The next mom I was going to talk about was Mom the Example here. And Timothy's mom, as a matter of fact, I think it's very interesting when you look at the life of Timothy, who obviously there's a whole gospel dedicated to that. This was Paul's son in the faith. This is a man that was actually circumcised by Paul, which I thought was kind of interesting. I didn't know that until I read the story. But here was a guy who was not necessarily molded by the faith of his father. As a matter of fact, his father is not mentioned in the New Testament at all. But both of his mother and his grandmother are mentioned as being the source, the exemplar of faith to him. He comes to saving faith just by the reality of life that his mother has lived out before him every day. Now, it's true that faith is not inherited, but I definitely believe it is passed on from one generation to another. Again, there's a lot of theologies out there that we say because they sound good on bumper stickers or on your refrigerator. I'm just not sure how true they are, like the fact that God has no grandchildren. And it makes you feel as though you're powerless and that every person has to kind of like take God on their own terms, which is true. But I also often think that we minimize the effect that parents have on the spiritual inheritance that people have as well. You are affecting whatever family you are involved with right now. How you're modeling, what you live, it has an impact. And it has an impact that either is going to diminish an influence in their spiritual life or it's going to increase in their spiritual life. And I want you to kind of just get the picture just for a minute about what would have happened if these women would have just kind of thought to themselves, well, you know, I don't really have a spiritual head and I don't really have a father, so I can't exude myself. Listen, you need to live out your faith, be you father or mother, in the way that God has called you to live, and don't be afraid of the influence that you have. One of the last ones that I wanted to just talk about was going to be, I don't even know what we're doing here. Where is this going? Could you hit the next slide for me? Click over one more. Mom the Networker. Now this is mom, this was definitely a mom of meddling. In the New Testament, we see that there's this story of the sons of Zebedee. They call these guys the sons of thunder. I wonder if they were mama's boys. But James and John, mom, decides that she's going to go to Jesus. And she confronts Jesus in this story in the book of John, John chapter 2. In the book of Luke, these guys' mom goes to Jesus and actually pleads for a position for her sons. Give them a job, basically, is what she says. Let one sit on your right hand, let one sit on your left hand. Now, the interesting part about that whole story is that Jesus doesn't reject her request. He qualifies her request. He asks her a deeper question. He says, "Do you know what it is that you ask?" And that's about the only response that's recorded. And she says that she actually responds in a positive way. You know, it's obviously a story of contrasting ambition. But I want you to think just for a minute about what it must have taken for this woman to go to Jesus and say, "Hey, give my boys a spot at your, you know, spot at your table." Again, she's exuding influence and working in her general direction. The last story that I would like to tell you today is probably the more ultimate one. Go ahead and hit that for me again. Hit one more slide over. Mom, the Situation Maker. And this is the story of Mary and Jesus in John chapter 2, verse 1. Jesus' first miracle, just to set the stage, is done at a wedding. He's attending as a guest and his mom is there. Mom notices that the wine's running out, which again shows, you know, Mary must have been a little bit of a partier. But anyway, so here it is. The wine's running out. And so Mary decides that this is a good time to you know, use the Jesus thing that's over there sitting on the table. So she comes to Jesus and says, "Hey, they're out of wine." And Jesus has a very interesting response to his mom. He's kind of acting like everybody else would when their mom pushes them too far. I identify with this story because when I was a little kid, I had a really weird sense of humor. Even as a little child, I thought things were funny, and I wasn't necessarily a class clown. I liked to be in the shadows a little bit, but obviously my humor is still renowned at Robert M. Pyle Elementary School. My mom thought I was hilarious, and so whenever her friends would come over, she'd always get me to stand in front of all of them, and she'd say, "Be funny." And that was a lot of pressure being the hit of the party when you were just that age. My grandmother used to dub for the movies, and so she would get us as far back as I can recall, like 4 or 5 years old, something like that, she would kind of get us beside the piano, and she'd make me kind of sing songs while she was singing songs, sing songs with her. Now, the only thing that made that horribly embarrassing is that we lived on a cul-de-sac, and so I was playing like street baseball with my friends, and so my grandmother would call me into the house, and in the Latino culture, there's certain levels of power that you cannot rebuke. You know, mom, you can kind of tell off. Grandmother, you can never tell off. You are guilty of hellfire for the next 400 years if you happen to insult grandma. So you can argue back with mom, you know, you could say no and run away. But if grandma calls you, you hear mijo from the door there, you have to go home. So my grandmother would not just painfully make me come in and do it. She'd say, "Why don't you boys come in? I've baked you some cookies and you can listen to Johnny sing." Now, they were more than willing to accommodate my grandmother. Cookies and humiliation, they were ready for it. She always made me kind of sing songs there. So I identify with the pressure that Jesus was under when his mom comes and says, "Hey, they're out of wine." Jesus is probably looking at his buddies going, "Oh my God, it's my mom. She's coming this way." Mom asks a request. He's like, "Mom, no, don't make me do this." But she has a very interesting response. Here's Jesus' response to mom in verse 4. He says, "Dear woman, why do you involve me?" Now, I think that's a very interesting phrase. There are several commentaries as to what Jesus meant when he said, "Dear woman." I can best summarize my opinion of what Jesus probably meant by a t-shirt that I saw at at Kohl's the other day. A woman had a black t-shirt on, and on it said, "Why are these children screaming, and why are they calling me mama?" So I think Jesus was saying in "Dear woman" is like, "Hey lady, I don't know you." But whatever happens, he wants to know why Jesus needs to be involved. He says, "Why do you involve me? What does this have to do with me? My time has not yet come." That's a very interesting statement from the omnipotent one, the Son of God, the one who was and is to come, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He makes a statement that you can read a lot of theology in, and believe me, there's about a billion commentators that have an opinion as to what Jesus meant when he said, "My time has not come." But and of all those comments that people are making, I've kind of come to the conclusion that he really didn't believe that that was his time to launch out at that particular moment. It's the only thing that makes sense when you see the frame of the story. So I want you to see something very powerful, something that has stuck with me as I kind of studied all of this, and that is that there's this kind of pushing on Mary's part for Jesus to do something that he doesn't think that he's ready for. That could create a whole bunch, like I said, theological problems when you think about it. How could this be? Was he just saying that because it was convenient to kind of, they'll write about this later, it'll be a good contrast? Or did he really not believe in his heart that this was his time? Well, I think it was the latter. I think that this is one of the only stories that show Jesus working in power before he is baptized in the River Jordan by the baptizer, John the Baptist. There are several people who believe that all of Jesus' miracles only came after he was baptized by John the Baptist in the River Jordan. That it was when the Spirit descended upon him that Jesus' ministry really was launched. Well, this particular story seems a little out of context then, because Jesus works a genuine miracle before that ever happens. It's the first recorded miracle that Jesus ever did. And so I would point to the fact that that even Jesus, as he is growing and learning, walking in human flesh, has to struggle and fight against the things that you and I have to fight against. You know, don't for a minute imagine that Jesus wasn't confronting self-doubt and insecurities. I have found in the life of my own children that they themselves are facing fears and tribulations, doubts about their future. It's okay when you're human to wonder about what's going to come of me and how I'm going to, you know, get beyond this. People that are anointed don't always know how to get from point A to point B. People get stuck. And I look at this influence, and I told you earlier that I would maybe end with a real short story about my mom. I kind of came to this realization about my mom after having a chance to meet my father. And that is that there's a lot about him that's very endearing. And there's a lot of good qualities that he has. He's a very tender person. But I notice that his life is dominated by fear. My mom wanted to record records. And I told Sue recently that my mom was a dreamer. Oh, had she kind of accomplished all the things that she had dreamed about, but at 17 years old, she had cut a demo record and she had been very proactive. She had given me, as I grew, every experience of life, which is really weird because as a 12-year-old kid, I probably was more responsible than she was. But I think that as I think back now on how I am operating in my giftings, what I think about myself, my worldview, I wouldn't be the person that I am if I hadn't had the influence of my mom, who, like Mary, believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. For all of us that are here today, moms, don't be afraid of the influence that you carry, because you probably carry a greater weight than you realize at this point in time. There is a faith that you can call your children to, something that is deep calling to deep, something that is very deep within them. Their response to you in the natural world may be very harsh. They may be regretting it or doubting it or trying to get away from it. But you just keep on encouraging. You keep on lifting. And in doing that, you're beginning to fulfill what the gospel tells you. The Bible says that we should stir one another up, that we should begin to stir in ourselves the gifts that we have received by the laying on of hands. We should be as deep calling to deep. No one is going to get to their destiny without having somebody that's behind them that is pushing and encouraging. Let me tell you, to some of you, I represent a guy who's leading that you're following. To others, I represent a pain in your ass that just keeps kicking you forward, because that's my role in life. But if I have that by way of kicking you forward to the kingdom, I have it because my mother kicked me. I have it because my grandmother kicked me as well. And so in the same attitude of faith, I'm just saying that in a very nurturing way, as best as I can, you keep doing what the Lord has sown in your heart to do. You keep on believing, even in the face when it doesn't seem like there's anything to believe in, when all you can do is see failure and doubt. The Lord is with you, and He will empower what it is that you hope for and you dream, because the Lord answers the prayers of His people. And as I'm considering just one last story I'd like to tell you, I'd like to just share with you the story of this desperate woman named Leah. Leah is rejected by her husband, and she all she really wants is the love of her husband, and so she has these children just to kind of get the love of her husband. And it's very interesting that of Leah, although she was rejected by her husband time and time again, that it's of Leah's lineage that all the priestly lines are born and all the kingly lines are born. And the thing that really stands out to me in that story is not so much the pain that she endured, even though she endured a great deal of pain. It's the fact that she just never stopped believing. And in history, she's the one that we remember, not her sister Rachel that was also married to her husband. But what we remember about that story is that it doesn't make any difference whether or not you've been rejected of this world. You may be living in a period of rejection right now where you don't think that you're enough and you don't measure up. And you're wondering, you're feeling kind of powerless about all that you are facing. Well, I'm encouraging you today because I believe in my heart that God hears your prayers just like He heard Leah's prayers. God answers. And that's what you really need right now, is that you need the Lord who answers. And so I want to pray for all of you today that as you are moving towards faith, that you guys would come to a place of believing, because I so appreciate some of the things that you guys are doing on behalf of your children. Keep on interceding, keep on leading, keep on directing, keep on encouraging. And in those words, I just believe in my heart that fruit will be produced. Can I just pray for you this morning? Father, I just pray for all those that are here today, God, that You would just encourage them, that You'd lift them up in their most holy faith. God, I thank You for the faith here, for moms that might be meddling. And Lord, I recognize that there's a fine line between meddling and control, but Lord, they know what I mean. And I pray, God, for just all of those that might be feeling futile. Lord, those that might be feeling like they are insignificant or might want to give up today. I pray, Lord, that You would just give them faith this morning. Help them to believe, God, even though they may not know how to do what they need to do next. I pray, Lord, that Your peace would just begin to come on every mom that's here today. And I want to pray for you, Mom, that might be here that may need a little bit of encouragement in this area. If you're worried about that kind of influence, if you are concerned about the state of your family, I'm just going to believe God with you, that the Lord will help you in this next phase of life. I believe that in the power that God has placed in you to change the circumstances, to change the tide of history. And I pray that whatever it is that you set your heart to pray, whatever it is that you dare in your heart to believe, that it would begin to manifest in the lives of your children. I thank God for you. I thank God for all the time that you have spent investing in the heart of your children. And I thank you most of all for many of you who have shared your stories with me about your children, that you have believed against all hope, that you have dared to dream, and that you keep on believing in them even though they don't believe in themselves. And I ask an anointing on your life today, that you would be secured and built up in your faith, that you would know the joy of the Lord, and that would be your strength. In Jesus' name, amen.